March 27th, 2014, at 1:36. With me this afternoon, Senator Faircloth, Senator French, Senator Bishop, and myself, Chair Senator Egan. Senator Dyson is excused. And the staff for today's meeting, Dana Owen, staff to Senate Transportation, Secretary Ann Krekelberg, and teleconference operator Alex Judice. I did it? Okay, we have three items on the agenda today. Senate Bill 197, naturally occurring asbestos, and we can either move this bill or hold the bill. Sponsor Senator Olson. Next is Senate Bill 94, again, rights of way as a further referral to judiciary. And we have people here to testify from the Department of Law. Also, we'll continue public testimony if there is any. And it's my intention to hold this bill. Then a presentation on H.J.R. 10, Constitutional Amendment for a Transportation Fund, as a further referral to finance. Sponsors Representative Peggy Wilson. So, first bill on the agenda is Senate Bill 197, Naturally Occurring Asbestos. Prime sponsor Senator Olson, and presenting will be David Scott. And as Mr. Scott is getting ready, we also have Polk Hafner from the Fairbanks off-net, from the Attorney General's office to answer questions in case any come up. Mr. Scott, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Scott, staff to Senator Olson. The bill in front of the committee, SB 197, provides a one-year extension to the deadline for Department of Transportation to adopt and prescribe a method of bulk testing under AS 4442420A sub A, and allows them to develop and implement regulations. The underlying bill was passed in the 27th legislature, and the crux of that bill was to require DOT to put into place a system and requirements to allow for the use of aggregate of gravel which contain naturally occurring asbestos, and the regs they just haven't gotten to the DOT has just not been able to quickly establish regulations for that. And we have a member from DOT or a representative from DOT here as well who could go into detail on why that hasn't happened yet. But the when you look at the bill, section one of the bill is the extension for the interim project authorization, and section two of the bill is the extension for there's an immunity clause in the underlying bill of which was HB 258, and we're extending those two.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Scott. Mr. Healy, Roger Healy, would you like to come forward and just in case members have any questions? Welcome, Roger. And your name and position.
Hi, I'm Roger Healy. I'm Chief Engineer with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Great. Thanks, Roger. Questions of Mr. Scott or Roger? Seeing none, Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if we could have an explanation on why the regs are not written.
Certainly. Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, this is a unique program, not only within the nation, but obviously within the state and with the department. We ran into basically hiring difficulties in hiring somebody originally to forward the regulations. We now have that person, and they've been doing a good job. We issued the draft regulations, I believe, last week or 2 weeks ago, and we are on schedule to hold the public hearings in the week of April 14th in Juneau, Fairbanks, and Ambler, and anticipate wrapping those regulations up shortly.
Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was actually involved in the original legislation. Was it Representative Jewell who passed the original legislation and is trying to make aggregate available in his community? And unfortunately, the aggregate has asbestos in it, as I understand. And so does the state and the region have the immunity necessary to move forward? The health numbers were way low, and the community is already exposed to the same aggregate already. So have we done all that we can do to protect the state and the community and the health of the individuals that the aggregate would be used near?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, the original bill provided an interim period for adoption of, or basically implementation of, interim regulations. That was served a purpose of identifying designated areas within the state where this immunity would apply. The one area that immunity, or that area, was designated was the Ambler area. Under those interim interim procedures, the department received and approved a number of applications for projects, I believe from the Housing Authority and a few other smaller projects, including our own Department of Transportation projects, namely the airport reconstruction. That interim provision within the bill allowed those applications and that process to go forward. So those projects, there is no holdup on those projects. In regards to, I believe, the second part of your question regarding the health of, you know, the overall health of the community and the projects, the interim regulation or the interim procedures and the application period the application approvals we went through identified the provisions within the bill of you had to have the final product must have coverage of some type of encapsulation over the naturally occurring asbestos material that's identified.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. Further questions of either Mr. Scott or Mr. Healy? Mr. Hafner on OffNet, did you have any comments on this bill?
I'm sorry, I got interrupted by a mechanical. By the way, this is Polk Hafner, for the record.
I'm sorry.
From the Attorney General's office representing DOT. Could you repeat your question? I didn't hear it quite.
I was curious if you had additional comments.
Only the one observation that under AS 01.10.100, the authorizations that DOT has provided under its interim authority are effective, even though the interim authority expired at the end of December. The point of having the extension of the interim authority is in the event that there are additional requests for approval of either a naturally occurring asbestos area or a specific site-specific plan that come in between then and when the regulations can become final.
Great, thank you. Questions for Ms. Hafner? Seeing none, thank you very much for remaining online and providing information. What's the pleasure of the committee? Either hold this bill again or move it. Senator French.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see any reason to hold the bill, but I'll just say that I was a huge fan of the underlying legislation. I thought it was a mistake, but it's law. We do have to have the regulations. And probably while I was out, we got a good description of why it took so long for them to be promulgated, and so I'll just I'll go back and review the tapes for what happened. So I'm not going to hold the bill up, but again, I'm lukewarm on the idea just because it helps put into effect something that I think is a bad idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator French. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill number 19728-LS1513-A from committee with attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Objection. Okay, we'll take a brief at ease. Senate Transportation will come back in order, and next one, the Senate Bill 94, Rights of Way, as a further referral to Judiciary. And we had a presentation and public testimony on March 13th, and we invited as Kent Sullivan, Department of Law, and we'll continue public testimony if there's anybody that hasn't testified as yet, and we do have folks that would like to testify. So, Mr. Sullivan. By the way, the sponsor of the legislation is Senator Olson.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Chairman Egan, my name is Kent Sullivan, and I'm from the Department of Law and Natural Resources section. And I wanted to briefly touch upon some of the high points of a letter that I wrote and gave to Senator Egan regarding some of Department of Law's concerns with this bill. One of the major concerns that the Department of Law has is that it would cause the state to relinquish on a massive scale many of the RS-2477 property interests that it currently possesses. And from a legal perspective, this would make RS-2477 a far less valuable and effective tool to the state of Alaska. And the way that the bill would do this, it would cause the typical width of RS-2477 rights of way to be narrowed in the state from 100 feet down to 60 feet. It would also greatly limit the allowed scope of uses that can occur within an RS-2477 right of way. And it would freeze RS-2477 rights away to the condition, mode, and method of use that existed at the time of its repeal in 1976. And finally, it would effectively grant private property owners veto authority over the state's maintenance and improvement activities on RS-2477 rights away across private property. And all of these things would have an impact to the state's RS-2477 property right. If you view the state's interest in RS-2477 as a bundle of sticks, and each of those sticks within the bundle is a different thing. The width of the right-of-way is a stick. The different allowed uses within the rights-of-way is a stick. The right to access streams, the right to park within the right-of-way, the right to camp within the right-of-way, the right to pull over and take pictures or do whatever, all of those are different sticks. Also, the state's right to maintain and improve the right-of-way is a stick or different stick. The different modes of transportation that can be used, whether only foot traffic is allowed or whether you can use ATVs, whether you can use highway vehicles, those are all different sticks. And the way that the state's current RS-2477 rights are, they're very broad and encompassing, and they include many, many, many sticks. This bill would effectively strip many of those sticks away, thereby diminishing the state's property interest. And each of those sticks has value. And many of the value of these sticks are hard to determine, but just one of the ones that can easily be determined is the reduction in the width from 100 feet to 60 feet. There's currently in excess of approximately 20,000 linear mile of RS-2477 rights away in the state. About half of those occur across private property. The reduction in that width from 100 feet to 60 feet, DNR estimates, has a fiscal impact to the state of $48.5 million alone. And that's just one of the many ways that this bill would reduce the state's property interest in RS-2477 rights away. Another issue that's a concern is whether or not the bill would cause a problem with regard to the state's obligation to preserve the public trust and the constitutional requirements to protect access to state land and resources. RS-2477 is a valuable tool in achieving access to state land and resources, and again, this bill would effectively give up a lot of rights that the state possesses in that regard, and there's a question whether or not that would violate the state's fiduciary duty to maintain, to the extent it can, access to those resources and lands. Another thing that the bill would do is it would create a disparate patchwork of property interests. RS-2477s frequently go across not only state land and private land and federal land. And here, what this would do, it would create a different set of rules that applies to private land from the rules that apply to federal land and to state land. And so you would have different widths, you would have different management rights and responsibilities, you'd have different scope of uses that would apply to each of the underlying land ownerships. And from a management perspective, that's extremely problematic when a right-of-way passes in and out, in and out, in and out of private land. It also, from a public's use perspective, it makes it difficult for the public because they have different things that they can do depending upon the underlying land ownership. And so that causes a problem. Another issue is that it would arguably promote litigation, and this is because it creates a mechanism whereby if a private landowner objects to maintenance or improvement activities by the state, it would first have to go to mediation, and if it didn't go to mediation, it would have to go to court. And there's a concern that this would hold up the state's ability to do those things until that legal action took place, and it would actually promote that. The final thing that it does is the state's currently involved in litigation with Otna Corporation over the Kloutina Lake Road. What this bill would do is it would say that anywhere that the Kloutina Lake Road RS-2477 right-of-way overlaps a 17B easement, that the state would give up its RS-2477 right-of-way and simply accept a 17B easement. The problem is that there's many distinctions between 17B easements and RS-2477 rights-of-way. And again, this would create, in that situation, a right-of-way that's a mix of the two. And one of the problems with 17Bs is they're much more restrictive. 17Bs are owned, possessed, and managed by the federal government as opposed to the state of Alaska. So the state doesn't have control over them, the feds do. The state can unilaterally terminate a 17B easement without the state's say-so. And that's a concern. Another concern is that a 17B easement can only be used for travel. You can't stop along a 17B easement and park and take pictures or have day use sites or camp or launch boats or any of the typical things that you can sometimes do in an RS-2477 right of way. So it's much more restrictive. And that's problematic if that's all the state was left with. And it would basically circumvent all the state's defenses and assertions that it's made in that case. So I'm happy to answer any questions that any of you may have in addition to what I've addressed here.
Great. Thanks, Mr. Sullivan, and thank you very much for your letter. It was very informative. Questions for Mr. Sullivan from the committee? I guess you're lucky out so far, but don't leave.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we also have John Bennett from DOT available to answer questions. However, on off-net, we do have George Helms from Anchorage on off-net. Mr. Helms, welcome, and your name and affiliation, please, and provide your testimony.
Yes, my name is George Helms. I'm representing myself. I happen to be a private landowner that would be affected by this legislation. I just want to let folks know, as far as the some of the facets of that bill and what we are experiencing as private landowners and the state's exertion of the 2477, it appears they can also that unilaterally add arterials to these 2477, meaning if there's additional trails that have been created across private property that connect to an existing 2477, the state has made assertion that they can unilaterally collect those as well. The 2477 widths that are mentioned, in many cases, the state's routing those on what are actually privately funded improvements on trails, et cetera. The state is basically taking these free of charge for public use, also including cabins, outhouses, that kind of thing. The legislation would help to curb some of that behavior, protect the private property interests on the adjacent properties. And for those reasons, as a private landowner, I certainly support this bill. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Great. Thank you very much for providing your testimony, Mr. Helms. Questions for Mr. Helms from the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Helms, for sticking around and testifying. We also have John Bennett again from DOT in case somebody has a question, and also Wynn Menifee from Anchorage Office of Division of Mining, Land, and Water is available from DNR to answer questions as well. Is there anything further on this bill? Again, it's my intention, I can quote, but to hold this bill. And is there anyone in the gallery that would like to provide testimony and just forgot to sign in? Seeing none.
Set the bill aside?
We're going to set the bill aside. Okay, thank you for providing testimony and your information. Next to follow is House Joint Resolution 10, Constitutional Amendment Transportation Fund, as a further referral to finance. Sponsor Representative Peggy Wilson, and presenting today, Rebecca Rudy. Peggy, welcome, and present.
Could we with take the brief at ease?
You can take a brief at ease, you bet. our brief recess and continue with HJR 10 and welcome Representative Wilson to our meeting today. Representative Wilson, also chair of House Transportation. Peggy, welcome, and I guess you or Becky's going to make the presentation.
I'll make the presentation.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. For the record, I'm Representative Peggy Wilson from District 33, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing House Joint Resolution 10. There are actually two other bills in the other body that together make up HJR 10 or ATIF, and so they make up the transportation plan totally. These bills are tied very close together, and so for the committee's indulgence, I would like the latitude to present the entire package.
Representative Wilson, hold it. If you can just pause for a second, we're not seeing the presentation.
I didn't know where it was.
It's doing something.
I can hear. There it goes. Okay. So,
okay, excuse me. Go ahead, Representative.
All righty. So anyway, for the whole package, it takes three bills. However, two bills, because of the funding situation this year and everything, the two other bills are sitting back in House Finance. But we have passed out HJR 12 or 10, and they're all tied very close together. So with your indulgence, I would like the latitude to present the entire package concept so that you get an idea of what it all means before we drill down to the actual House Joint Resolution 10. So this will give the committee an overview of how the plan is to this fund could come together, and after the voters accept the change to the Constitution. Now I'd like to talk with you about an issue that is very important to me and you as Alaskans, and it's transportation. When I say transportation, I mean surface, roads, ferries, harbors, airports, transit systems, trails, you know, the movement of people, goods, and services. I'm going to start out by getting us all on the same page. So we've all heard what our transportation system, what condition it's in Alaska here. And I'd like to explain the process that we as a committee went through before we came to the conclusion that we did. I will also then propose a solution to our transportation problem and the challenges that we have. And finally, I will sum up for the committee the outcome we expect if this gets to the voters this fall. Alaska's transportation system is aging. Our major roads are 40 to 50 years old. Now, there hasn't been a major road built in this state in 30 years. That's hard to believe. But it's true. With population growth, we get congestion, especially since that growth is primarily in the rail belt. The population of Alaska has tripled since those roads were built, and we're putting more and more people on roads that were designed for the 70s. Our ferries are old and well maintained, but the older ferries cost a lot to operate, and they're coming to the end of their projected life expectancy. Alaska has over 250 state-owned airports. Imagine that. I mean, people just don't realize how big our transportation system is. And they're very expensive to maintain, these airports. Barges can only travel up the rivers during the few warm months to bring the necessary gravel that it takes to maintain those airstrips because they're not paved. Most of them are gravel. We have a number of state-owned harbors, 25. The state is in the process of transferring those harbors to many of the municipalities. However, once they're transferred over to the municipalities, they actually many times don't have the money to maintain them and to keep them up. Alaska is and always has been a natural resource state. Our natural resources are not normally on the transportation grid. Or close to railroads. We need to have access to those natural resources in order to diversify the stream of revenue that we have coming to our state. And we all know how badly we need to do that. There is a large backlog of projects, over $20 billion. Plus, we have over $700 million in deferred maintenance. Our funding, both federal and state, is not keeping up with the demand. Rural highway traffic across the United States is up 23% and continues to grow, and vehicle miles traveled is up 35% and still growing. There is an estimated $65 billion loss due to traffic congestion every year, and that loss is passed on to us as consumers. Federal fuel taxes are not keeping up with inflation. Nationally, our fuel taxes can't keep up with the demand, and we can't keep up with ours here in Alaska either. That's very obvious, because if we could, we wouldn't have a backlog. With technology improvements, cars are going further on a gallon of gas, meaning that the revenues from our fuel taxes are not going as far because they're not as much. Alaska hasn't had an increase in motor fuel taxes since 1961, 53 years. We have the lowest motor fuel tax in the nation at 8 cents a gallon. The next closest state is Wyoming, and they're at 14 cents a gallon. Our state funds have to be stretched farther and farther to cover rising costs in all of our service areas. The new federal transportation funding program, MAP 21, focuses on national highways and safety. Great goals, but Alaska only has 4 national highways. We also used to have greater flexibility with respect to safety dollars as well. And now we're limited to roads with notable crash histories. Well, that will help our safety corridors. We have 4 of those, and our 4 national highways. So they have horrendous crash, you know, our roads have horrendous crash statistics, but there are more needs out there than just those roads. We all have areas in our own districts that we know need help. The National Highway System funds are now driven by performance, and that performance has penalties if we don't perform. Since the penalties for non-performance are painful, state match could double or triple. Even on mainline highways, we may be required to focus less on congestion, which is what we really need to do, and modernization, and more on just keeping up. And what the federal highway are wanting, they want us to look at the areas where we have, This just means that there's a lot of maintenance projects out there which don't provide new lanes or new access where that's where we need it. I'll talk about funding by population on the next slide. I heard in a webinar by the Council of State Governments that states can expect to see a slowdown in payments from the Federal Highway Trust Fund as early as this summer. And by next year, in the summertime, the fund will be empty. That's kind of scary. Here's a sample graphic, a simple graphic of some of the issues that are making it difficult for DOT to fund our Alaska highways and community roads. On the left-hand side is the pre-MAP 22 allocations, which was before last year. The light blue represents the National Highway System percentage of funds, and which is 48%, and the dark blue is the Community in Alaska Highway System percentage, which is 52%. On the right side, MAP 22 allotments are quite different. Now the National Highway System receives 72% of the federal funds, and all the other roads in Alaska receive 28%. To further complicate matters, 14% of that 28% allocated for the non-national highway roads is divided up depending on population. The lime green proportion, 4.4%, goes to cities that have more than 200,000 in population. Only Anchorage qualifies there. The Kelly Green portion, 5.4%, is directed to cities with a population less than 200,000 but more than 5,000. That only reaches Sitka, Ketchikan, Juneau, Fairbanks, Wasilla, Kodiak, and Kenai. The dark blue portion, 4.2%, is for all the other roads in our state. The bright yellow portion is flexible, but unfortunately it is consumed by increased mandatory requirements from the federal government, like data collection, bridge inspections, geographic information mapping, and other necessities, leaving very little for project purposes. In Alaska, we've always had a serious problem with financing transportation infrastructure. There's a new transportation funding program in the works, but it's anyone's guess at this time what that will mean. There will be no more money in the Highway Trust Fund in 2015, and we need to bring our aging infrastructure into the 21st century. How are we going to do that? In order for Alaska to have access to our natural resources, we need to greatly increase the development of our transportation system. We need to depend less on the federal government and start taking responsibility for Alaska's roads, harbors, airports, railroads. We need to take that responsibility ourselves. We need to start planning for the future, which is real hard for this legislature to do, it seems. Right now, we know that's not happening. These problems aren't new, they're just compounding. The House Transportation Committee started investigating these funding issues 5 years ago. What have we done to find the answers to all of these questions? For 3 years, the House Transportation Committee listened to DOT, grassroots organizations, and transportation organizations identifying the challenges of all the transportation in our geographically diverse state. The committee flew to remote villages to view their airports, the basic transportation in and out of their communities. We took the Dalton Highway to see what our truckers use every day to get goods to the area where our major source of revenue is located. We rode the urban highways to see the challenges they face with regards to safety, congestion, and deferred maintenance. And we rode the trains and we experienced the ferries underway. So we really went out and actually went to these different areas. After witnessing the problems firsthand, we started our quest for a solution. We heard from AML and the Mat-Su Borough, who teamed together to contract an independent study on the fiscal issues of statewide transportation here in Alaska. We heard from national experts, from the National Conference of State Legislators, on what other states are doing to address their transportation infrastructure budget gaps. We heard from state experts. Larry Pursley put together a report on the funding options available for us in Alaska to address the fiscal shortfalls that we are facing today in Alaska's long-range transportation plan. In our deliberations, we rejected the options to fix the problem by bonding, which just commits future funds to pay off debt. Our children and grandchildren should not have to shoulder our debt. The solution we proposed is the culmination of all those hours of committee hearings, travel, and research. Our proposal has three parts. Part one, reestablish the dedicated transportation taxes and fees as a part of the transportation fund that was in existence at statehood. The Alaska Constitution contained two dedicated funds related to transportation. The first one was known as the Highway Fund. All monies collected from the taxes on vehicle motor fuel were deposited into that fund and had to be spent on highway-related purposes. The second fund was called the Water and Harbor Facilities Fund, and monies from taxes on motor fuel used in boats and watercraft were placed into that fund and had to be spent on water and harbor facilities. ATIF or the Alaska Transportation Infrastructure Fund, as we call it, will combine these two funds into one. Reinstatement of the Transportation Fund requires a vote of the people to change the Constitution. Ensuring that all taxes and fees paid for transportation activities will be spent only on transportation. Right now, that isn't what happens. The second part of the proposal is we must continue to fund transportation as we have in the past. In other words, this is the key to making real progress in improving our transportation infrastructure. This is the one way we can slowly chink away at our $20 billion backload of projects. And three more 100% state-funded projects. The third solution is important. We need to take advantage of both the cost savings and the time savings for state-funded projects. In other words, projects without federal strings, while providing for our growing transportation needs. This fund will move projects from one concept, from the concept to completion much faster. With state-funded projects, we will see the impact of our state dollars in our communities much sooner, and they will be less costlier. Less costly. For example, state funds were used in the construction of the Elmore Road extension in Anchorage, which was completed in 3 years as opposed to the 7 to 10 years that it would have taken if we would have used the whole process and gone through the all the federal processes that had to be followed. The intention is to provide a dedicated revenue stream that will allow more projects to be completed faster and less and cheaper, in addition to our ongoing state and federal funds. HJR 10 will put a change to the Constitution on the ballot so that the people can decide to reestablish the Transportation Fund. So you ask yourself, how can we fund ATIF? Our concept is to endow the fund with a substantial amount of money. We will need a sizable endowment to seed ATIF. If we don't, it will be difficult to make much progress in clearing off of that backlog, and we want to leverage every federal dollar that we can while capitalizing on state-funded projects. We heard that a federal dollar is worth 75 cents as compared to a state dollar. This endowment will be determined after the Constitution has been changed to reinstate the dedicated transportation fund. Annual revenue from the list that you see on this slide will go into the fund, and this is approximately $80 million per year. One thing to note, any special use fees have been preserved. In other words, if there's any things like vanity license plates, airport lease revenues, things that they use now from those funds, we didn't touch those. Those will still continue as they are now. So we have a fund. How shall we manage it, and how much will be available each year to be used for our transportation infrastructure? It is my plan to have the Department of Revenue manage ATIF. That would be consistent with a 6% rate of return over time. They manage many funds, and they have the expertise and a darn good track record, too. All of the profits would be reinvested into the fund each year. Each year, there would be funds available for appropriation. It will be the sum of 5% of the market value averaged over the previous 5 years, plus half of the taxes and fees collected from the previous year. Also coming out of the fund will be the expenses for the Department of Motor Vehicles, the expenses to administer and manage the fund, and also costs for the Advisory Council. The fund would be self-sufficient and will not require general funds for administration. The appropriations will follow the regular budgetary process and would be approved by both the governor and the legislature. So we have a fund, and it's being funded annually by revenues added to the large dedicated fund. How does this concept address which project gets funded first? And this can be changed, because this is the part that's not going to move this year. So next year we can really work and do this however we want to, but this is just one idea. This would be handled by a two-panel, two-step process. First, we will have to prove and decide if the projects are better suited for development using state funds or to go through the regular STIP process that we now have, effectively deciding if it will be a federalized project or 100% state-funded project. The Alaska Transportation Panel, ATP, could be comprised of seven members, four public, one from each area that you see on the slide, the DOT commissioner, the STIP board member, and a member from the Alaska Infrastructure System, or Commission, AIC, which I will describe on the next slide. They will serve four-year staggered terms. DOT would develop a set of guidelines to be used as an aid to decide if a project would best be federalized or go the funded through ATIF. Our intent is to take the politics out of the decision-making process. Our plan has a fund, and it is being used annually by revenues added to the large dedicated fund. Who could decide which projects gets funded first? So when the project has been selected for development using ATIF funds, it must then be reviewed by the Alaska Infrastructure Commission, or AIC. You can see the makeup on the slide. Seven voting members. This commission can take the ATIF selections and numerically rank them using the set of criteria written up by DOT. This ranking will create a prioritized list. The list will need to be completed by the advisory commission by October 15th each year and submitted to both the governor and the legislature. This ensures that the governor will have time to incorporate the ranked projects into his or her capital budget. ATIF projects are limited to capital transportation and major maintenance projects in the modes of transportation you see on the slide. The constitutional amendment states that the appropriations from the fund must be used for transportation and related facilities that are designated by law. In the enabling statutes, I propose we have constrained the fund to only be used on capital projects and major maintenance. This keeps the fund functional as additional revenue stream to what we already appropriate. The difference in the language from the constitutional amendment to the enabling statutes will give future legislators the ability to use the money from this fund for operations only in times of fiscal shortfalls. All the legislature would have to do is make a statute change. Wouldn't have to go back to the Constitution and make a constitutional change, which would allow the fund to be used for operations. But we don't want it to be used for that. We want it to be used for actual projects. Anyone could submit a project for consideration. The state, a borough, an unorganized borough, a municipality, a community, or a village. We envision that there will be submission forms, and they need to be filled out to make sure the commission has enough information to rank the projects. Every project would be considered. The funds available for federalized projects, which are projects that are constrained to use the federal processes, could be no more than 20% of the fund. This is to incentivize more state-funded projects. Here's a graph that we could expect from the Alaska Transportation Infrastructure Fund. If it is capitalized with $2 billion, the blue star bars are the balance in the fund over time, and the red line is the amount of money that could be appropriated from the fund each year on projects. You can see that the payout starts at about $83 million the first year and then is $131 million the second year and rises at a rate of about $3.3 million in the early years. Now, remember, this is $103 million in addition to the operational and capital budgets we already have. And we're hoping that in years of good times, we would be smart enough, or the legislature would be smart enough, to put more money into that fund, and then we would see it grow more. That $5 billion, or if we put in $2 billion now, it would grow to $5 billion in 20 years. That $5 billion includes 50% of the revenue that had been deposited over the 20 years. This is a representation of what we could expect if the other two pieces of legislation in the other body were passed. It is just to give you a rough idea of my concept of the fund. What can Alaskans expect from ATIF? Well, the fund will help Alaska plan for its future. We will be able to work down the $20 billion backlog. It will help us get rid of the deferred maintenance list. ATIF will decrease the Alaska's dependence on federal dollars. We still want to leverage every federal dollar that we can, but ATIF would allow us to do more state-funded projects as well. ATIF will provide more direct jobs and, along with that, an indirect employment boost as well. Many of our major roads are not safe due to congestion and deterioration. ATIF will help to move safety on our roads, bridges, airports, and to improve safety on our roads, bridges, airports, and harbors. There are numerous studies that show transportation investment creates a competitive environment, attracting additional income investment into the state. This would include increased output, increased productivity, increased income, increased property values, employment, and an increase in real wages. It reduces the cost of production and non-commercial travel time. This all results in an improved quality of life for Alaskans. Our state's economy is highly dependent on our resource extraction, and these industries are transportation intensive. Alaska has the majority of the nation's coastlines, but has significant challenges developing and maintaining the state's docks and harbors for access to our fishing resources. We have world-class mineral deposits, but few transportation corridors to get to those resources. We have major untapped oil and gas resources with no access to the remote locations. ATIF will improve access to our resources, which will decrease the cost of production. Okay. I think I've defined our looming transportation challenges that stem from two major issues: declining funds, both federal and state, and an aging transportation system. I think we need to act now and implement the Alaska Transportation Infrastructure Fund. ATIF is about the broader social good and the economic progress of our state, about meeting ever-growing transportation needs of Alaskans. The sheer volume of weight moving in Alaska underscores the importance of transportation systems to our economy. Alaska needs to take actions now. We have put it off way too long. We need this constitutional amendment on the ballot this November. I think all Alaskans want a better transportation system. Let the people decide. Mr. Chair, thank you for this opportunity for letting me share my plans to help Alaska move forward. And that's the 30,000 view look at it. And
great. Thank you, Representative. Questions from committee members for Representative Wilson? Ms. Rooney, did you want to provide any follow-up?
Only for questions.
Okay, great. And we do have folks that have signed up in the audience to testify. First to testify, Tom Bryce. Mr. Bryce, come forward. Give us your affiliation and, well, you know how it works.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Tom Bryce. I'm representing the Alaska Laborers today. We're made up of three different unions, two private construction unions and one blue-collar public employee union. We represent about 6,500 workers throughout the state of Alaska. We've been tracking this issue going on, you know, 3 or 4 years, well, ever since Representative Wilson introduced it. We'd like to express our support for the constitutional amendment, HJR 10. I think it breaks down some constitutional barriers that exist in terms of establishing long-term planning for the transportation needs of the state. Just encourage your support.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Bryce. Questions for Mr. Bryce? Seeing none. Thanks, Tom. And we also have Sarah Geary in the audience from AML. Sarah, if you can come forward, your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Sarah Geary, Legislative Coordinator with the Alaska Municipal League. First of all, I want to say thank you to Representative Peggy Wilson for continuing to push to make sure the Transportation Infrastructure Fund is established. AML would like to offer their support for HGR 10. The League has been concerned about how the state and local governments will fund the needs related to Alaska's transportation infrastructure, both aging and new. With federal funds depleting or being dedicated more and more to mass transit in heavily populated areas, we must be ready to maintain what we have and to construct new necessary infrastructure, whether it be roads, highways, bridges, railroads, the marine highway system, airstrips, or airports. All of these are essential to the mobility, commerce, and economic development of our state. It is very important for the state of Alaska to find ways to fund our infrastructure that do not always include the federal government, and we believe that HGR 10 is an excellent vehicle for that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Geary. Questions for Ms. Geary? Sinan, thanks, Sarah, for providing your testimony. And is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify that just forgot to sign up? Seeing none, and there was no one online to testify for or against HJR 10. So we've heard the presentation. Representative Wilson, thank you very much for the good presentation. And we'll hold this aside and bring it up at next meeting. Great. Thank you. Anything else to come before the committee this afternoon? Senate Transportation is adjourned.